On today's College Football Inquirer, what might the Big 12 do to Texas Tech following the Brendan Sorsby ruling? And will Texas Tech be willing to go to court to stop whatever that might be? We'll talk about that. Plus, there's action on Capitol Hill. The Sorsby ruling got everybody moving on the bill as well. And some more lawsuit action that Ross Dellinger has been following very, very closely. We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. We got the full crew back. Stephen Godfrey, Ross Dellinger, both here today. Godfrey's off vacation. He's got a playoff beard going on. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing.
Silver Fox. Just going to go ahead and
address
it.
He died it gray. Andy, he died it gray.
And everybody, yeah, and everybody said before we started that I should die. Well, Andy did not say I should diet. Ross said I should diet, which you know what that means? Ross hangs out with too many college football coaches because there are a bunch of millionaires who all buy Just for Men for $10 and put the cheapest dye in their beard and hair. We need to get better about our hair care, coaches of America.
Well, they're all worried about other things right now. And basically everybody's worried about what's going on with Texas Tech right now throughout the country. If you ask Texas Tech mega booster Cody Campbell, he says, well, this wouldn't happen if it was at LSU. Nobody would even talk about it. I'm like, Cody, did you see when LSU hired its football coach? Like, this is nothing compared to that. But it is a big deal because it does affect everybody. Brendan Sorsby ruled eligible. That's not exactly how it went. He was granted an injunction in a Texas court. That will allow him to play for Texas Tech this season, despite the NCAA having found that he bet on his own team while he was at Indiana and placed other bets in violation of the NCAA's gambling rules while at Cincinnati. But we're spinning this forward, guys, because everybody's been yelling about it for 3 days. The question is, and this is the question I think that coaches are asking, that ADs around the country are asking, is will the Big 12, the conference that's affected the most by this, will the Big 12 do anything about this? Ross?
Ross?
Can they? Will they?
They can, of course, definitely can, right? Section 3 of the bylaws states that the university presidents and chancellors would a supermajority vote, which would be 12 of 15, because the issue party wouldn't vote, or the interested party, Texas Tech. They can sanction with 12 of the 15 members presidents voting. And it leaves, the way the bylaw is written, right, it leaves open, sort of gives them flexibility on what they can do, right? It says it empowers them to determine whether any sanctions are appropriate and what those sanctions, what kind of type and extent they are. So, they definitely can. Will they? Based on the reaction across the country and the reaction within the league, I'm guessing that they'll do something.
Ross, I think the last time the Big 12 issued a sanction was to Baylor in February of 2017, amid the Brile scandal. There was talk of it the previous summer as the scandal broke, and then I think there was actually a formal sanction passed by the then Big 12. So you're talking about like the old Texas OU, very different culture in the Big 12, not the Brett Yormark, not what we have now. I looked it up, though, and a sanction is basically, it's just a fine, which I think Texas Tech would just kind of stroke a check, shrug, and move on, right?
Well, it can be. There are multiple options, and the bylaw spells out a couple, but leaves it really vague in case you want to do something different.
What I understand, they get a lot of flexibility on what to do. Now, a lot of people, Godfrey, do think because of the situation, because of the fear of legal challenges from potentially Texas Tech in response to any sanction, that they will just do that, right? Just levy a big fine on them. I don't think that would appease people in the league. I don't think that would appease people across the country.
No. It seems like whatever talk of sanctioning or whatever action they want to take as a conference, it's really just going to be kind of sound and fury signifying nothing, because Tech, Cody Campbell, the main character of college football right now, could easily stroke a check to bypass any sort of financial hit for a penalty. And again, one would assume they're not going to push it much further, try and take scholarships, modify a schedule, do anything like that, because then we're going to end up in countersuit hell, right? Or not countersuit hell, just lawsuit.
No, it'd be preemptive suit hell. You actually may, if they get wind that there's going to be some sort of teeth to this thing, I think they're filing a lawsuit before the sanction actually comes down. And
why didn't we go to law school, boys?
It's billable hours remain undefeated. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the bylaw, it's interesting because it offers a few examples. And one of the examples is you can prohibit them from postseason stuff, which means you could theoretically ban them from the Big 12 championship game. You could take them off television. That's in the bylaw as an example. I don't think they do that. And I'll tell you why. Guys, I don't know if you guys were at Big 12 Media Days last year. I was when Brent Yormark got up and did his kind of state of the conference. And I can't remember if he said this in the body of his speech or if this was in response to a question, but it was the most interesting thing he said. And it was essentially this: the Big 12 needs one or two football programs to separate themselves and become true national title contenders. That is how healthy conferences operate. That's how big time conferences operate. Well, guess what? Texas Tech, more than anybody else, is doing the stuff you have to do to separate itself from the rest of the Big 12. And I think there are schools that could also do that. Like, I think BYU could probably do that and is trying to do that. But Texas Tech has been more successful so far at doing that. And so if I'm Brett Yormark, I'm sort of on the horns of a dilemma here, because while I have 15 schools yelling at me, you got to do something about this, Brett, I kind of like having the main character of college football right now in my league.
That's our Yormark, baby. That's our Yormark. My prediction is that the teeth of this outrage will dull significantly in the coming weeks as other narratives emerge. And, you know, Ross will report on 9 or 10 different developments, be it on the Senate, be it on the capping of NIL. Other things will happen. Other things are going to happen as we move forward towards the actual football season. And Andy, I think you make the most important point, which is at the end of the day, we're talking about a middle two conference, and nowhere is the existence of college football feel more tenuous than the middle two conferences. Those ACC schools, those Big 12 schools, I feel like I bring them up once a week on this show about like all the different futures we're talking about for college football. And it's like, do I feel like I belong if I cheer for like a Kansas State or an Iowa State or like these Big 12 schools, right? Or if I'm busting my rear end like a Houston has for the last couple of years to be the best possible program I can be. At the end of the day, the Big 12 is not going to defang its best national title threat this year. Now, I don't think, Andy, they're so short-sighted that they would ignore and completely do nothing. I think there's going to be some lip service here, like a financial fine. Letter. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because while Texas Tech is doing the thing that the Big 12 needed, like that you said that Yormark explicitly said, I think you still have 4 or 5 other programs with the potential to do what Texas Tech does. They're just, it's much like the way that we always talk about the bottom of the Big 10. They're still in development. Mm-hmm. For the time being, though, there's a stability and a credibility that whether you like it or not, Texas Tech being playing on New Year's Day, even though they got their ass kicked because they needed a quarterback. You can't mortgage that. You can't get rid of that in the short term.
I will be very interested to see what they decide to do. I think I'm with you. I think you make a big stink, maybe throw a financial penalty in there, which Cody Campbell can just write a check, and then you just move on about your day. And the thing is, like, we've seen this with other situations before, like the Big Ten. They suspended Jim Harbaugh for 3 games. That was a situation where you had one school at the center of everything. Now, by the way, Cody Campbell, if you thought this was bad, go ask a Michigan person what that was like in the middle of the season as they were the undefeated and one of the best teams in the country. You guys don't understand what getting covered is yet. You will understand it if you keep getting better at football. Michigan gets covered. LSU gets covered. You're not really getting covered yet.
God knows they want to be, though. I'll give them credit for standing on Main Street throughout this and every other issue that's involved Texas Tech, Andy. Texas Tech has not backed down. I was on vacation, guys. It's because I have this illustrious beard right now. I had one school call me while I was on vacation to let me know a press release was coming. It was Texas Tech. These guys, they're asking for it. They want it. They're getting it.
Yeah, no, yeah. And they're handling that part of it fine. Look, you can talk about what Kirby Hokut said in his press release all you want. We didn't file the lawsuit. Brendan Sorsby filed the lawsuit. Yeah, he filed the lawsuit because he's still on your team.
Yeah.
You could have taken care of that. Chose not to.
I'm enjoying some of this.
I do not believe the other ADs when they say we would have kicked him off the team. No, you wouldn't have.
No, you wouldn't have. Not a damn one of you would have. And not a damn one of you in the SEC. And by the way, guess what, Josh Brooks? You wouldn't have either. And I haven't been on the show, so maybe we can talk. We are still talking about Brendan Sorsby, right?
Yes.
We're not talking about, okay. I was just saying, we're talking about the guy who had a decent, good season at Cincinnati, right? We're not talking about a high, I've been gone, so I just wanted to tap the brakes for a second.
Coverage, he was going to be in contention for 1-1 with Fernando Mendoza.
Absolutely.
Somebody said that with a straight face.
Absolutely, so. I could derail the show and for the next 60 minutes give you my countdown of my favorite histrionic media responses to what's gone on this week. But in the interest of not burning any more bridges in the industry, let's just move on. The coverage of this has been hilariously embarrassing for, I think, college football media and NFL media. But again, it is Brendan Sorsby. Okay, Brendan Sorsby, the guy who was just like had a decent season at Cincinnati. Just wanted to say that. I haven't had a chance to say that yet. We're not talking about Arch Manning.
Fernando
We're not
Mendoza
talking about
was a guy who had a decent season at Cal before, before he won the Heisman. So.
Yeah, but my estimation of Kurt Cignetti and the system that Fernando entered is higher than my estimation of McGuire in Texas Tech.
Mac Leftwich slander will not stand here. Goodness.
Sorry. I just want to take a cleansing breath because there have been so many media people who have lost their damn mind this week. Take us wherever you want to go on this, Andy, because there's a million paths to walk. I don't think that.
No. I want to go where you want to go, Godfrey, because this is your chance.
Yes, we haven't
been
really
wondering
heard
how you were. Well, I mean, we don't wonder. You do post how you're feeling pretty frequently.
Yeah, you should definitely post. You should definitely tell us how you feel, because we haven't heard from you on this issue about. Do you think Brendan Sorsby should be able to play?
I would offer up a couple different solutions if everyone was actually sane about this, and then we'll get to the concept of what actually happened here in a second. But in a just world, Andy wrote a perfect rejoinder to all of this, which is if you have a CBA, this thing could have been locked, loaded, and done. Like, hey, if you watch the show, you know I'm a Falcons fan. Calvin Ridley went through this. There was a pretty clean and understood process. Calvin Ridley, he did a knuckleheaded thing while he had some time off. He bet on the Falcons. He bet on some other teams. And guess what? He got bumped for a season.
Yeah, it is the most apples to apples comparison.
Definitely.
Because you can't compare it to the NBA ones because those were game fixing. That's the best apples to apples comparison.
It's not Alabama State, the basketball team. It's not Alabama baseball that happened a couple years ago.
Right, that was also game fixing. Yeah. Yeah.
I want to get it. We'll get into game fixing in a second. If we had a clean system here, I would propose one of two things. It's funny. I was actually thinking about PED suspensions in baseball because, again, as a fan, I've learned about that the last couple of years. What if for your first this is just a hypothetical. First off, we're not going to murder him. We're not going to excommunicate him for life. It's not going to destroy the integrity of college football. We've had more cheating scandals than I can count on 10 hands in the last 10 years. It's everybody calm down. So what if we said,
but this is where I disagree with you. If I'm running the business, having players capable of betting on the sport and no way to punish that is a problem for me.
This is the semantic difference. And I recorded an episode of Phantom Island last night with my co-host Ryan Nanny, who is a lawyer. And there's something that, hey, shout out to our retired friend, Dennis Dodd. Dennis Dodd, the homie, which everyone calls Dennis, anyone who owns that much Tommy Bahama.
Well, listen, when he's ordering Pinot Grigio at the bar of P.F. Chang's,
that's a smooth man right there. St. Louis sports fanatic. All right, enough of that. He accurately pointed out that this is not the purge. This is not open season. This does not enable college athletes to wildly bet on their team and undermine the credibility of the sport. What this injunction, Andy, you laid it out perfectly at the intro to the segment. This was an injunction. This was a judge issuing a decision saying, we at least need to wait before this goes to trial. We are not saying the NCAA can enforce
this. This is never going to trial because the whole point was to get an injunction.
Hang on. Right.
But the trial is after the season. Yeah.
It's exactly like the Chambliss situation. But what the judge is essentially saying is there's inconsistency in the application here. They're not saying that the NCAA can't do it.
Where's the inconsistency?
Hang on. I agree with you on that part. The more that we did a whole long episode on this, it's phantomisland.show, there's a plug. And we kind of slowly looked at the actual legalese of this. And the reason we did that is because so many sports media have just lost their minds. Andy, I agree with you that I don't know how much variance the NCAA has displayed in enforcement of this issue. What I think the judge has done here has he's illustrated the variance that the NCAA displays in general when it comes to enforcement of their rules. They, for years, have the NCAA talked for years about a silo policy, which was that in every enforcement case, whether it was gambling, whether it was eligibility, whether it was improper benefits, it doesn't matter. Trinidad Chambliss's tonsils, whatever. There was always a silo policy, meaning that we're going to judge this case on what we decide to be its merits, and you can't establish precedent. What this judge has said is basically, if I'm understanding this correctly, and after talking to a lot of lawyers, that history of inconsistent decision making is what leads there to be enough doubt to pause this. Now, in a normal courtroom setting, you'd pause it, you'd grant the injunction, we'd go to trial. Because this is football, Brendan Sorsby is going to play the season, and then obviously, as we know, he's going to move on. So you asked me what the punishment would be. Mm-hmm. If we had a CBA, if we had a set of rules, what I would say is a first offense like this, and I'm a big believer in we need to help addiction. There's addiction treatment for this. I do think this kid is on the short end of the stick in terms of agency, and that's an unpopular opinion. But I would say, hey, look, you have a problem here.
His agent might disagree with that.
Yeah, no kidding. You have a problem here, Brendan. We're going to help you seek treatment. We're going to let Texas Tech help you seek treatment. You're not going to leave your community. You're going to go to meetings. You're going to do all this. And there's one of two things. This is what we came up with on the other show. 6 games for the first offense. 6 games. Not
half
2 games.
Half a season. Not 50% of a season if we want to put it across all sports.
Exactly. Not Abilene Christian and Oregon State. But the Houston game that's so big in September, I don't have their schedule in front of me, but I know there's a couple other whoppers up front in terms of like kind of crux games.
Not if you ask Sarkisian. The Houston one's about the whopperiest. So,
hook 'em, Andy. I wonder why that is. Since Ted Cruz was saying that we were going to ruin the sport, I wonder why Texas Tech doesn't have a strong enough conference.
Well, guy. No BYU or Utah. That's just luck of the draw. But
No Texas and Oklahoma. No one asked Cruz that question. All right, let's stay on topic. Half a season, or what about this? What if we go to him and we say, "Hey, look, you're suspended for a year." But we're going to freeze your eligibility pending rehabilitation treatment. You can play in 2027. Texas Tech can pay you the full amount of NIL, but you don't get to do it in 2026.
And Texas Tech's going to be like, hell no.
No, but this is under a – I'm saying in a world where there is some sort of CBA.
I like it because it's diabolical because it throws it right back at Texas Tech with Texas Tech saying, well, we didn't sue. In that scenario, in that universe, Texas Tech's like, oh, it's been nice knowing you, son, but it's too bad it's not going to work out here.
I think first offense is 6 games. I think second offense is a year-long suspension. And then I think a third offense. You know, what's funny is like talking to lawyers about this and not media has been really enlightening. That's about as far as a compliment I want to pay the legal community. You know, we created DUI enforcement this way, right? There's a ubiquity to gambling now, much like there was a ubiquity to alcohol consumption in an earlier part of American history. You know, people talk about the Black Sox scandal or Pete Rose or all the things that have gone on in history with sports and game fixing. But that happened when gambling was a microcosm of our population, right? You could go to Nevada to place a bet. You could go to Atlantic City or you physically interacted with a bookie who was conducting an illegal business. Now you have 17-year-olds who can hold this up and do it 200, 400, 500 times a day without supervision. And the reason why we did that is we permitted that. So much like any other vice consumption, we need to restructure how we enforce and how we treat addiction. It's no different than alcohol. It's no different than drugs. So you get a DUI, Andy, tomorrow, you got a DUI tomorrow, the enforcement of that DUI in the state of Florida is going to be very different than your third DUI in the state of Florida, is it not?
Correct. Oh, yeah.
Okay. someone could have a bad day and maybe have 2.5 beers. I'm giving you a normal situation that happens in the world. Have 2.5 drinks, go home. They've never even rolled a stop sign before. They get a DUI. There's a way to come back from that with treatment and with court-appointed work and probation, et cetera, where it doesn't destroy your life. Now, if you have a third DUI and you're endangering a community, they're going to treat you a lot differently in the legal system. And by the way, none of this is going to cause anyone's death, like Brendan Sorsby firing on Cincinnati.
So do we think that the sanction should be a half a season?
I would say half season.
The Big 12 comes down.
Which I would fight if I were Texas Tech, because obviously I want him to play. I'm sure I'm doing this because I want him to play. But yes, if you had a CBA or something that was actually airtight, I mean, nothing's airtight, but something that you could reasonably defend in court, then that actually is a pretty logical one, because that would really put the onus back on Texas Tech. If there's a half season suspension, the school has to decide really what do you want to do? And I can actually think of a suspension that this is similar to. It's Will Grier at Florida, who was actually suspended for a year. But if Florida had decided they wanted to keep Will Grier, he'd already served half of it. So he could be reinstated after the first 6 games of the 2016 season it was. And they opted not to do that. The coaching staff at the time, Jim McElwain was the head coach. They're like, I don't know if we really want you back. If they'd wanted him back, they could have just plopped him in the starting lineup mm-hmm. for the second half of that season. They had to do the math on it and decide what they wanted to do. They ended up making a terrible mistake, because if Jim McElwain says, Will Grier, we'd like to keep you, he might still be Florida's coach. So it is very interesting. I like that. It's good. When we come back, let's talk about this a little more, because you mentioned changing the way you enforce these things.
Yes.
The NCAA has tried that and gotten pushback on it. Let's talk about that, plus how this may affect how they make these rules going forward, or how anybody enforces them going forward. We'll talk about it when we come back. The all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament, which is starting right now. Make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. Play solo, create a private group of friends, join a public group, play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. My picks are in, so give it a shot. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. That's yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and Stephen Godfrey's done some math on his penalty structure. If you had suspended Brendan Sorsby for 6 games, Godfrey, what game would he be coming back for?
Oh, God, I'm glad you asked, Andy. He'd be coming back for what I assume is going to be a night game on a Saturday night, October 24th, against in beautiful Nippert Field, against the Cincinnati Bearcats of Ohio.
His former team. Pete Rose game.
That might be a big game. I don't know.
Boys, we have something called narrative in the business. And by the way, just to backtrack a little bit, in terms of competitive disadvantage this would have provided Texas Tech, that means that Sorsby would sit out what is going to be a great game on Friday, September 18th, against Houston in Lubbock, as well as a home game against Arizona State, former Big 12 champion. So,
also known as their two hardest games.
Is this TCU slander? Is this TCU slander? Anything?
Okay, it might be Baylor slander too. So on paper. By the way, also announced this week.
Anti-revivalry.
Guess when Cincinnati's homecoming is?
Oh, no. Not the Tech game.
It's the Texas Tech game.
Can we got to do this for a future show. I'm like,
man,
maybe we just stop saying homecoming on schedules.
Yeah.
It's like, designed to insult the opponent.
It seems like an old sort of archaic thing that should go
Ma
away.
And Pa aren't taking the train down for the one game anymore. Like, can we just maybe 86 this? Because very often it ends with the university tripping on their manhood, so to speak. So Yeah. Maybe we just get rid of home. Does anyone designate homecoming as the game they're going to?
I don't think this was an accident. So,
well, then let's change it and brand it to like FU night. Like, yeah,
I'm fine with that. So it's interesting, Godfrey. I'm fascinated by what you brought up because I think you're right about how gambling is more ubiquitous in our society. The penalty structure probably needs to change. I think the DUI example is really interesting because as the oldest person on this show, I do remember as a kid and also talking to my parents about it who were young adults at this time, drinking and driving was not vilified the way it is now.
No.
Until the late 70s, early 80s. And
yeah,
because
smoking cigarettes, think about that.
Yeah.
People were dying on the highways and interstates in insane numbers.
Right. And you had organizations like MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and SAD, Students Against Drunk Driving, that mm-hmm. formed. And so you're right. And it changed the way that got policed. It changed the way it got prosecuted. And society adjusted. And I think you're right. Society probably has to adjust to this. Now, interestingly enough, and Ross, you covered this really thoroughly when it happened in 2025, the NCAA tried to adjust to this. They tried to change their rules and make it where college athletes would be allowed to gamble on professional sports because they have no influence on an NFL game or an NBA game or anything like that. And it is just such a widespread part of the culture in college right now. They figured, look, we can't police this because everybody's going to do it. So they passed that. And then before the thing got enacted, a lot of the conferences in the schools said, whoa, we don't want to do this. Right. And they actually voted to rescind the rule change.
And Texas Tech was one of the votes that voted to rescind the pro sports rule change. It was mainly a movement by the power conferences and Texas Tech voted, their president voted as well to rescind that rule. To this point, someone sent me yesterday sort of an alert from an outlet, another sports outlet. And it's kind of like an alert that I guess goes out if you're a subscriber. And I'll read it to you. The top of it.
All right.
Powered by BetMGM. A judge's decision to restore Texas Tech quarterback Brennan Sorsby's eligibility after he gambled on his own team was triggered back
the same one. I noticed the same one.
It's amazing.
I love this.
Do you know who the presenting sponsor of Andy and Ariane 3 is?
Is it the fine folks at BetMGM?
It would be BetMGM. That's right. Yes.
Comp me a room, man. That's so good.
It's good.
It's so good.
So to the point is, I think the NCAA and plenty of the schools in the NCAA are aware that, you know, what is going on with betting and I think they were trying to at least limit the or open up the policy a little bit, right? Provide some flexibility for athletes to vote on pro sports. And the power conferences got together and rescinded that vote, including Texas Tech. And in the penalty for just pro sports betting, right, is a third up to, I think, maybe a half of a season. If you bet on pro sports, it depends on how much you bet. There's like tiers. Right, if you bet $200, it's like a third of the season. If you bet $800, it's half the season. And more than, I think, $1,000 or more than $800, then the NCAA can suspend you more. And they were trying to get rid of that.
I don't love the dollar amount as the modifier. I think it maybe frequency or
frequency would be more
teams involved. I think it might be a better qualifier modifier. We need to have a graphic made for this show. Like, do you guys know what a wheel meme is? Where it's like it's like an Ouroboros, the snake that eats itself. We're on the dial where obvious thing needs to happen in the world of college sports. NCAA introduces rules. Member institutions slap it down, hate it, right? Say absolutely not, and defang the NCAA, which seems to be my word of the day. Thing that the NCAA said needed to happen happens in real world. NCAA feckless to enforce it. Member institutions cry foul and say, someone should do something about this. NCAA tries to do something about this. Member institutions don't allow, and on we go. That's wherever we are in the wheel is we just need to have like a dial sort of at this
I will
moment.
Once again, quote Greg Sankey from when Ross and I were in SEC spring meetings a couple of weeks ago. People have to want to be governed.
Yeah, it's not a bad. I really like that Greg Sankey quote. I mean, that's pretty strong.
Yeah.
Shout out, my guy.
So
CrossFit's paying off.
So this is a long way of getting to another thing we've talked about a ton on this show, and that's the Protect College Sports Act. That's the bill that Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell dropped in the Senate 2 weeks ago. And I've seen some pretty disingenuous promotion of this bill saying, if this bill had passed, the Brendan Sorsby thing never would have happened. Well, that's just a lie. Like, there's nowhere in the bill that talks about gambling, one. There's nothing in the bill that stops a player from suing over breach of contract in state court, two.
Yeah.
But, Ross, there have been meetings this week. Because, again, it's just a bill. Meetings. And if we remember our Schoolhouse Rock video, it can be amended many, many times before it actually gets voted on or passed. So, what have they been talking about?
Yeah, there was a little round table, mostly of non-power league administrators and coaches on Wednesday. And, you know, I kind of went mainly to hear what the senators had to say and had to say afterward. And, you know, right now they're trying to get the SEC and Big Ten on board with this bill. And there were revisions sent to the senators from the SEC and Big Ten, suggested revisions on Tuesday night, I believe Wednesday morning. And so they're debating what to change, if they're going to change anything. I don't think they're going to change the biggest issue that the Big Ten and SEC have with the bill, which is the pooling of rights and the anti-expansion clauses. I don't think those are sort of like non-starters, as somebody mentioned to me. And I don't know that the senators feel like they have to have the two biggest stakeholders in the industry to pass this bill to reform the industry. That's at least what Ted Cruz said, right? I asked him straight up, can he
get the bill passed? Because I believe there are senators who represent the states that those schools are in.
I counted them all up, Andy, and there's 52 of the 100 senators are from states with SEC or Big Ten, and there's 318 U.S. House of Representative members of the 435 from
and how many
SEC
votes
or Big
does something
States?
Need to pass the Senate? Not
60.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. In a majority in the House. Obviously, you know, all the members in states with a Big Ten or SEC school aren't going to necessarily align with them, but there's going to be a few, you know, so that's an interesting dynamic, but they seem to be extraordinarily confident in this bill, despite the SEC and Big Ten's opposition. And it does seem to be, too, that there's some real frustration on both sides, right? Not just with Big Ten and SEC, but the two senators who authored this bill, Cruz and Cantwell, they seem to be some frustration with the SEC and Big Ten, too. Cantwell yesterday, for a second time in a week,
they introduced a bill directly targeting those entities and are frustrated that those entities are mad.
yeah. They're not, you know, they're being pretty public about it, right? I mean, you had last week Cruz say that the SEC and Big Ten's trying to start a super league, and then Tony Petitti clapped back, and then for a second time in a week, Maria Cantwell say we're fighting against the SEC to reporters. So it's an interesting dynamic. It's kind of fascinating right now what's happening between the two entities.
The vocalness is not a sign of fear, is it? Like, is it? I just want to be clear, because Ross, you have pointed out emphatically how quiet Petitti is and how like. Usually those in the position of power, they're not going to respond to everything they don't need to. I have noticed the Big Ten and the SEC seem to be more active about dissuading on this one. Is that rooted out of a fear of this thing actually having a chance? Because when last we all did this together, the consensus was like, this thing's not going to pass.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we did it all together last time, there was a lot of recent pushback from Big Ten SEC, but also from, you know, Congressional Black Caucus and others. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, to get back to your question, Godfrey, I think the SEC and Big Ten's public opposition to the bill is probably a good sign that the bill has certainly more of a chance than others, as we've talked about. I mean, just yesterday at the Capitol, Ted Cruz said that I think his exact quote was, this bill has a real prospect of passing. This is the only bill that has a real chance. Anyone attacking this bill has the burden of saying, what's the alternative? Which is obviously sort of a direct message to the Big Ten SEC.
But whatever. I think you're right. There is fear because, as Ted Cruz pointed out, it is the best potential to pass, even though it probably won't.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, if I'm the Big Ten and the SEC, that I do not enjoy having two U.S. senators accusing me of colluding, potentially violating antitrust law, and trying to form a super league. So I believe Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey when they say, we're not talking about forming a super league. I do not think they are.
No, they're not.
That would be illegal.
Yeah.
People talking about it? Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to be clear here because I often place tongue in cheek. Like, I think they're credulous. I think I made this joke on the show. Tony Petitti's not talking about a super league, right? He's not thinking about a super league. Mm-mm. That's probably going to happen without him being in the room.
Yeah. They probably are just as worried about it as anybody else.
Yes. And I also believe Sankey when he says we are a super league. We fortified ourselves by taking Red River. I have issues down the line with some of the causality and some of the lack of responsibility that the big two conferences will take for destroying the Pac-12 and all. I mean, that's a different conversation. But I believe them when they say this because the inevitable super league, which I still think is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame, turns out they were a prophet. Who knew? Biblical school. You don't accuse Catholics of being a Bible college often, but this feels a little kind of Book of Revelations here. Way to go, Irish. There will be a Super League eventually, but it's not going to form by some sort of like transformer cosmic like link between the Big Ten and the SEC.
With conferences coming together.
Voltron, thank you. My God, I'm off today. I'm sorry.
But yeah, it's Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, Alabama, Texas all calling one another and going, why are we subsidizing everybody else?
Exactly.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey guys, let's go kill Purdue.
Poor Purdue.
Sorry.
Purdue did nothing.
Sorry. Sorry.
By the way, the dynamic with this bill and the involvement of Cody Campbell in this bill, and then what's going on with Brendan Sorsby right now. Yeah, it's like this stuff is sort of intertwined, and I don't know how it impacts the Big Ten and SEC's potential support for the bill, but as you might expect, it doesn't help.
Right. Cody Campbell had an op-ed ready to run on USA Today about the bill early this mm-hmm. week. That got completely overshadowed by the Sorsby stuff because he's busy chirping at fans of other schools saying, you know, how many players has Georgia had arrested, blah, 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 blah.
By the way, USA Today, do your own damn work. Stop literally platforming the politicians. Like, hire an editorial team. That's pathetic.
Well, they had one.
Yeah, they did. I wonder what happened to them. The one thing I want to point out, because even I have my limits, okay? It has been suggested online, and I am going to be the person to stamp this out because normally I'm the one wearing the tinfoil hat on this show. No, I do not think that there was a masterstroke plan to destabilize the NCAA with Sorsby to the point that the Texas Tech-authored bill could make it through the Senate process.
Oh, what is? I don't think it's helping the bill. Yeah.
No.
When I was a kid, my favorite show on television was The X-Files. My old man was an FBI agent, and he was basically like, hey, I need you to understand, no one in the FBI is this organized or smart to orchestrate a multi-decade conspiracy to conceal the evidence of alien life. And it really broke me because like, you want to believe in the conspiracy.
Godfrey, that's what the men in black are for.
Well, it looks like us today. I promise... As someone who regularly says the establishment of college sports is out to get you and they don't care about the fan and the fix is in. I say that all the time. No, I don't think that like Cody Campbell and Joey McGuire were playing 8D chess and Texas Tech was like, this guy's got a gambling problem. We're going to sign him. We're going to fund his legal defense. It's going to come out in the offseason right as the same time we introduce the bill. No, that's not that has not happened. I promise.
No, that is actually made because the bill was a victory for Texas Tech and schools like it.
Yeah.
It has made it more difficult to pass it.
Yeah. What's funny is on the call with so SEC and Big Ten presidents met with Cruz, Cantwell, and Schmidt, the three senators, on Tuesday night. And one of the things on the call that was brought up was the Brendan Sorsby situation. And quite several times, Ted Cruz, as he said to me yesterday at the Capitol, this would have, like you mentioned, Andy, this would have prevented, the bill would have prevented the Brendan Sorsby situation. And one of the things he said to the presidents was, I promise Maria and I, speaking about Cantwell, didn't orchestrate this intentionally because this shows more powerfully than anything that the system is broken and needs help. But
and it does seem to me, smart people were probably like, hey, Ted, you didn't address it in the bill.
Yeah. Well, no. So, Andy, you know, it is addressed in the bill. Sports wage participation and sports wagering activity is addressed in the bill. Now, the argument is, would a federal law, if this were passed, would it precede, supersede some kind of state law?
You would have to find a way to remove these cases to federal court.
You would.
They could probably write something into the bill to do that, but they don't have it in there yet. So
yeah. Now, somebody did send me something that I think is interesting, and because it does have the participation, it grants the NCAA protection to enforce its eligibility rules for sports wagering participation, but would the bill override a state level claim? And that's sort of, lawyers have very much disagreement on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They do.
But you can write that into the bill.
Yeah, you could.
But also,
or we could collectively bargain.
You could do that. Because if you are an elected official who is pretty keen on states' rights, which I can tell you which party is more behind that than the other, you muddy the waters even further at that point. So
one quick aside, I was on vacation. I was in the Pacific Northwest. I've kind of asked the open question, like, why Maria Cantwell? Why sign on to this? Ted Cruz, because
Washington State got left behind.
The intent. That's, well, hang on. The intent is transparent with Ted Cruz. My colleague David Cavucci wrote a nice piece talking about how he's kind of literally been purchased by Cody Campbell. This fits the kind of narrative for what Ted Cruz enforces and believes in. And I'll leave my personal opinion out of that. Cantwell was always a little bit of a mystery to me, but I'm going to be honest. If you spend time up there in that part of the country, which Washington just played in a national title a couple years ago, Oregon is a perennial national title contender, that part of the country is, I still think, underrepresented by college media. Most of us aren't from there. It was interesting to have conversation with, there's a ton of college sports fans. You talk about haves and have nots. I do think, and just that kind of ideology that permeates in the liberal centers of the Pacific Northwest and Portland and Seattle, and it's very interesting to see how they're reckoning with both being on the cutting edge of college sports with those two programs and then really having the case study for, you want to talk about victim programs. I don't know if there's two greater examples in our lifetimes of college sports coverage than Oregon State and Wazoo, because Andy, you and I have discussed, you know, Texas Tech's fall from grace when the Southwest Conference became the Big 12, or sorry, Texas TCU's. Mm-hmm. TCU had the money and the wherewithal and the funding and the boosters. Like, they crawled back after 25 years, right?
Yeah.
To talk to Oregon State and Wazoo fans is to kind of witness the death that I think 20 or 30 or 40 other programs' fan bases right now are sort of having nightmares about.
And,
yeah.
And I can, I'll take you back to 2009. I'm at Autzen Stadium. I'm standing on the field as Oregon fans pour onto the field to celebrate winning the Civil War to win the Pac-10, where if Oregon State wins that game, they win the Pac-10. Like, we're not that far removed from them being basically equals, and they could not be more different now. And I think that's a big reason why you saw Maria Cantwell get behind this.
Yeah, definitely.
Guys, when we come back, let's head to another courtroom, because Jeffrey Kessler, who, by the way, was Brendan Sorsby's lawyer, because everything's connected, was in court arguing against the CSC on Wednesday. And somebody else has filed a big old lawsuit against the CSC. Ross Dellinger, all over it. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back on the College Football Inquirer, and Ross Dellinger, you were following along with a hearing on Wednesday. Jeffrey Kessler, the attorney of record for one Brendan Sorsby, but also the attorney of record for the House versus the NCAA plaintiffs, was in court arguing about the CSC in a hearing that could potentially, to use Godfrey's word, defang the new rev share police.
Yeah. I mean, it could basically, and Brian Seely, the CSC CEO, said it on the record in Destin, said it could result in a capless system if Jeffrey Kessler were to win this specific hearing.
A free market, as it were. Oh, wait.
Pretty much a free market.
Can't say it that way, because it sounds good when you say it that
way. Not only would it do that, right, it would also result in the approval of millions and millions of dollars, mostly from the Big Ten and SEC, that they promised their athletes in the system, that's caught in the system right now, if Kessler would win. So some people want Kessler to win this case. Oh, yeah. Usually, if you're in college, you don't want Kessler to win cases. But this is one where a few people actually want Kessler to win,
the
so the millions of dollars
governed,
that's in the
quote,
system can get through. Well, not only that, but also the people who have guaranteed their athletes millions of dollars that are just trapped currently in the system. So it was a 90-minute hearing. The NCAA attorney argued, you know, against the challenge from Kessler, that and basically what it boils down to is Kessler believes that all NIL deals except for those directly from boosters should pass right through the system, right? And the NCAA is arguing no, multimedia rights partners, corporate sponsors, associated, all these associated entities should be scrutinized and shouldn't just pass right through. So they went back and forth. The judge didn't rule. He'll probably rule in a week or two. Yeah. I got the feeling from the judge, the indication that he gave, at least, is that the CSC and the NCAA would win and that Kessler would lose, that he would, because it's so early in the settlement, and there's not a lot of evidence. I think the judge said the evidence is, quote, a little thin in order to rule to make some dramatic change like this would be. So I get the feeling that the CSC will win this, which means all these millions of dollars will continue to be held up in the system, and
unless
the process of approving deals will be more difficult. So unless what?
Unless you can do your paperwork well.
Unless you can really do your paperwork well. Now, in addition to this, there's like three CSC things, right, going on right now. There's this hearing. Then the conference, the Power Conference commissioners met yesterday to discuss changes of the policy to the CSC to allow these millions of dollars to get through the system so that athletes get paid. So that's going on too. There was no definitive decision made. Perhaps that will come next week on changes to CSC policy. Then there's a third thing, which is a new lawsuit filed that basically, again, would do the same thing all these other deals would do, which is uncap the market. And the lawsuit says it was filed, it's a class action lawsuit filed by USC and a Stanford football player saying CSC's rules in the House settlement, to a degree at least, violate state laws that allow athletes to make NIL.
So now I saw that and I thought, how this may get smacked down pretty quick, because doesn't the House settlement say that if you're a player and you take the rev share, you've opted into the House settlement, and therefore
you've opted in, you've waived your whatever it's called, right? Your antitrust claims, you basically right. waive them, giving them up. The thing that makes this lawsuit different, I think, is that it's using state law, because you guys, we talked about in the show and the other version of the show too a lot, is for, you know, we only got NIL because of all these state laws that were created, these NIL state laws. And this lawsuit is saying, well, these state laws shouldn't be superseded by a federal injunction tied to the settlement. So you can't
actually
do that.
Need a federal law to supersede them, which...
Yeah. Oh, right. And it uses that. It actually, the lawsuit's kind of fascinating because it uses public comments made by conference commissioners of saying, we need congressional help in order to prevent a suit like this, right? Mm-hmm. And then we get this suit. So it's got, maybe it has some legs, but the point is, to dumb it down for those who are like, what are you talking about? All these things... Mm-hmm. Basically uncap the market, right? They would all, if all these things win, it would uncap the market. So we're getting closer, the point is, to the market becoming uncapped because there's so many challenges that we're seeing built up and up and up.
If this player lawsuit doesn't work, which it might not, because they did opt into the settlement, this is what I've been saying all along. They didn't, because this is, it's a poor man's CBA, essentially.
Yeah.
But others can challenge this on someone's behalf. So a state attorney general can do it. Someone involved in a company that is being hamstrung by the CSC can do it. So it's not, they're not out of the woods, even if they win all of these. It's still an issue. But yeah, this is fascinating, Ross. And you know, it'll be interesting that the judge, so the hearing with Jeffrey Kessler, that was actually the judge that is administrating the House settlement who's looking at that.
Right.
And listen, Kessler and the plaintiffs can come back as many times as they want and tweak this thing if they want, or try to tweak this thing if they want.
They can keep on challenging the settlement, right? They can keep on challenging the settlement terms. But the way the judge spoke, he was kind of like, look, it's kind of early in the settlement. There's not a lot of evidence. There's only been two arbitrations, right? Like, I don't know if I have enough evidence to rule on this. But the bigger thing that might happen quicker is CSC enforcement policy changes from the power conferences directly that
would
open
created
up
the
system.
CSC, because they are defendants in the House case.
But now their schools have promised all this money, even though they weren't supposed to. They promised all this money to athletes, and the money is held up in the system, and they got to get it out of the system to the athletes, or the athletes will boycott, and then maybe we'll have collective bargaining and blah, 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 blah.
The worst thing...
They don't want that. They don't want that right now.
The worst thing for these... It's funny. All of this stuff.
Hmm.
But it all comes down to... better have my money.
That's usually what it does.
That's what it all comes down to at the end of the day.
The only thing I'll add in this is that I think people would be shocked to know how many the corporate side of this, how many people are behind streamlining this, because the people who are doing the paying, the people who are actually routing the money, are exhausted and frustrated at how semantic and nonsensical this shell game is of moving some of this cash around. Just talking to people who work on the side of like, hey, we are paying this person X amount in NIL, but we have to jump through these hoops. I don't want people to think this is solely just athlete greed run unchecked. No, like this is a business trying to comport itself and trying to do it with more efficiency.
Hey, middleman, earn your money. Like, they could just pay the athletes directly if they wanted to. And
I mean, there's
they might end
there's
up
a lot
deciding
of,
that.
There's a lot of people who are just like, let's
do
why
it.
Why are we cutting out that class?
Why are we giving 10, 20, 30% to a middleman to money wash? And I think that's what's happening. I think that's why a lot of administrators are rooting, whatever, you know, for Kessler to win this motion. It just doesn't seem like the way the judge talked that he'll win in, but it does seem like the power conference commissioners will settle on changes that will be able to move the money through quicker and more of the money through. And then maybe the long-term change, Andy and Godfrey is raising the cap and potentially putting in some
and the middlemen still get paid, which is what all
and
these
the
guys actually
would
want.
The middlemen would still get paid. Yes.
I love this sport so much. God bless the middleman. God bless the lawyers.
We should, before we bow out, we should say goodbye to our lovely producer, TJ, who's heading out, right?
That's right. Salute. TJ headed to, well, he's going to be making podcasts still. So with some of our friends. So
bigger and better things.
That's right. Thank you, TJ. And thank you for listening and watching. And we will talk to you on Tuesday.